All right, Murph, this is it, the much anticipated NHL trade deadline edition of the Great American Hockey Show podcast. This is where we're going to show all the different scenarios, name all the names, go crazy, get people really warming up with that anticipation for Monday afternoon. Can you feel it?
I can feel it, buddy. I can feel it. Let's do it.
All right, let's start the show. Start the music. And welcome back to episode number 11 of the Great American Hockey Show podcast. I'm your host, Joe Haggerty, here with Bruins Daily writer James Murphy. This is the NHL trade deadline edition of the podcast. And I think with this first segment, Murph, you know, we'll talk about a bunch of different stuff, but, you know, let's just get into the nitty gritty of, you know, what we're hearing from different people around the league, what we're expecting to see. What's one of your juicier nuggets that you've got right now?
Well, I think it's not necessarily something that might happen at the trade deadline, but something that could develop and lead the path to big things maybe at the draft and in the offseason, and that's what's going to happen with the Montreal Canadiens.
Of course. You're mainlined right into the Montreal Canadiens and what's going on up there.
But I am getting lots of inside scoops there, and I'll tell you right now, Joe, we have heard rumors throughout the season. I mean, ever since the Canadiens put the C on Max Pacioretty, that there was some internal strife in that dressing room, particularly between P.K. Subban and Max Pacioretty. And I can confirm right now that that's very true. And they can deny it all they want, but they've got a problem on their hands right now because from what I gather through my sources that are close to the situation there, one of them being in the dressing room, is that Max Pacioretty has a bit of a jealousy issue going on right now, or a bit of a feeling upstaged by P.K. Subban issue going on, and he's let P.K. Subban...
Because he's the captain?
Exactly, and he's let P.K. Subban know that. In fact, I was told that he's directly told him to, quote-unquote, tone it down, and that is not going over well, and it's going to be an interesting offseason in Montreal for sure, and I might just have to go up there and partake in the craziness because it is a nice city to visit.
Well, yeah, you could go up and ask Max, do you think you should tone it down a little, Patches? What do you think about that? That might light a fire up in the Montreal dressing room.
You know, you had to see this coming, though, Joe.
Yeah,
I was going to say,
Murph, this speaks to they probably should have just named PK the captain in the first place because he is basically the captain of that team and the heart and soul leader.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody
and
has more juice in that locker room with that organization than PK does. So, you know, I kind of feel bad for Pacioretty in one sense because he just doesn't have the power and the influence that PK does. But, you know, I've also just from dealing with him, from seeing his act on the ice, from watching the road to the Winter Classic, I'm not necessarily all that impressed with Pacioretty and what he stands for and who he is as a person either.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that the feeling you get from a lot of people and then you look at his resume is that it's kind of like, you know, Pacioretty's the kid with the silver spoon in his mouth throughout his life and PK's the city kid. And, you know, I know people that know Subban very well have confirmed to me that's sort of how they how he feels. He feels like, you know, Pacioretty thinks he's a bit above everyone else, and when the adversity hits, he doesn't deal with it well, and he tends to blame everyone else, and he gets overly sensitive. And whereas PK just lets it rub off his back. I mean, this guy's growing up, obviously, with the racism towards him on the ice, and that still exists, unfortunately, but he's always had criticism come towards him because that's just the type of personality he is. He's electric, he's flamboyant, and he understands it, and he doesn't let it bother him too much, whereas Pacioretty, I think, lets it drag him down, and when you're a captain, you can't have that.
And he handles PK, everything that he comes across him, he handles with class and dignity, and he does it in exactly the right way.
He knows what to say.
Yeah.
He knows how to massage the media. He just he knows how to deal with it. And that's what a captain needs to have.
Murph, he just feels like a captain, basically.
Yeah.
And I would expect when this gets resolved, Pacioretty will be gone at some point, and Subban will be the guy that stays.
And I would keep an eye on all the teams in the New York area as far as where he might end up.
Yeah, no doubt, because he's from that area.
Yep.
From my end, one of the interesting things that I've heard, and Justin Schultz is a name that's going to be out there, Edmonton Oilers needs a start somewhere else. Right shot defenseman, still young, 23, 24 years old. Theoretically, the Bruins should be in on that or should be interested in that
kind of
player, especially as a restricted free agent. But I get the sense from the people that I've talked to that he may end up going to one of the close competitors that's vying for one of those last playoff spots with the Bruins. as maybe a final little kick to the stomach from Peter Chiarelli towards the Boston Bruins, ooh, where he's not going to send that player to them when they could really use him, and instead he's going to strengthen like the Pittsburgh Penguins or one of the teams like that in
Devils,
the East.
Maybe?
Yeah, one of the teams that the Bruins are neck and neck with right now to strengthen them instead. And wouldn't that be interesting if that's the way that entire soap opera plays out? But, from what I'm told, all it's going to take is a B-level prospect and a draft pick to get him. So that's not a high price for one
and
of those competitors in the East. And I think he
young.
Could turn things around.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's still young, Joe, and this kid has the raw talent.
Yep.
It's just a matter of the environment he's in. I mean, you got to think all these young kids in Edmonton, a lot of them probably need a change of scenery because it's been such a losing environment, a losing culture there. So I'm with you. I think he's worth what seems like won't be that big of a gamble to get on the trade market. And
maybe he gets packaged with Teddy Purcell, a bigger deal,
and
too, where they need a forward and a defenseman.
This belief across the NHL, Joe, that the Edmonton Oilers and the Boston Bruins will hook up in a deal, and you keep hearing Doug McLean of Sportsnet saying Jordan Eberle's definitely going there. They've been do they understand what happened here in Boston?
No way.
Peter Chiarelli does not want to do the Boston Bruins any favors whatsoever. I just don't see them as trade partners
right
now.
When Dougie Hamilton was made available and teams knew that Dougie Hamilton was available, the Boston Bruins were contacted by Chiarelli about getting Dougie Hamilton back to the Oilers.
Yep.
And the first thing that the Boston Bruins said was, well, give us Darnell Nurse and we can start talking. And that's basically the Boston Bruins saying, screw you, Peter Chiarelli. Yeah. We don't want to talk trade with you and we don't want to deal with you. And that's essentially, I think, what was taken from that is, all right, you don't want to deal with me. I guess, we don't have to deal ever. And you know, Peter Chiarelli and the Oilers are the ones that have a lot of these valuable pieces that are going to be available this summer, whether it's Taylor Hall, whether it's Jordan Eberle, you know, Schultz now. So it's interesting. That is the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that maybe people don't always know about or consider when they're just doing fantasy trades between players. Any other interesting sort of nuggets or players or senses of where players are going to go, the big names that are going to get moved at the deadline?
Not necessarily names. I mean, I'm just hearing the same stuff I'm sure you are and a lot of our listeners are. But, you know, one thing that I've been thinking about is that we need to keep an eye on a team like the Florida Panthers. I mean, here's a team that isn't dropping off, Joe, like many expected they would. And they've got plenty of cap room. They have plenty of prospects. And you had mentioned to me off the air, I think it was the other night during the Bruins game, like, that's a team to watch. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they're interested in Louis Erickson. Maybe the Bruins send him there because they've got so many prospects and a wealth of young guys there. So that's a team that I think could get a big-name player and come out of nowhere and surprise people.
You know what's interesting, though? One thing I was told about the Panthers, too, in the last couple of days. They were in on Andrew Ladd, obviously,
of course,
the Chicago Blackhawks. They did not want to give up a first-round pick for Andrew Ladd. And the reason being that Dale Tallon doesn't want to give up first-round picks and go for broke this year because maybe he doesn't feel like this is the year they're going to get all
that
the way
really
to the cup.
Smart.
A young team, a team that doesn't have a ton of playoff experience.
Yep.
You know, maybe this is the year they get their
step.
Feet wet in the playoffs. Absolutely. Yep. And it's part of a learning experience. But Dale Tallon's not ready to give up first round picks this season and, you know, do it, go for it like Chicago, like LA, like St. Louis, like some of the other teams are that have been around for a while and had a lot of kicks at the can. So I don't know if they're going to get the biggest of names because of that,
mm-hmm.
but they're certainly going to be in play for a lot. They could use a couple more players. One of the teams to watch. But as I just mentioned quickly, I think the real thing you've got to watch is now that Chicago's made the first move for Andrew Ladd with that first round pick, Los Angeles,
yep.
St. Louis, Anaheim, they have to get out the heavy artillery.
Yeah.
And it's going to become an arms race out there. And that's why I think the Bruins will undoubtedly get a first-round pick for Louis Erickson and a prospect. Because one of those teams is going to need him to match what Chicago did with Andrew Ladd. Let's get on to the interview with Jeff Mack.
Let's do it.
And we welcome in Jeff Marek, good friend to Joe Haggerty and James Murphy from Sportsnet Hockey Central, and also obviously from the Marek vs. Wyshynski podcast that I think is everybody's favorite hockey podcast. Jeff Marek, how the hell are you?
The Hags and Murph, two of my favorites. What's going on, boys? You know, if it weren't already co-opted by the Disney Corporation, we'd say it's the most wonderful time of the year to be covering this game. This one's going to be a pretty frisky weekend, boys.
Oh yeah,
I look forward to it. What makes you the friskiest, Marek? What are you most interested or attuned to, as far as player movement, a certain player, a certain team? Who are you intrigued by as we enter this hockey trade deadline?
Mr. Hagedy, if I may order off the menu, I'm going to say a lesser known player, but for a very unique reason, and that's Jared Cowan. Jared Cowan was part of the Dion Phaneuf trade going from Ottawa to Toronto, just activated by the Maple Leafs today, and he is in the most unique spot that perhaps we've ever seen a player at trade deadline time, and here's why. He has a very unique contract. We've heard of, back diving contract. Well, he has a back loaded contract. He's in the last year of his deal, 26 years old. He's had a number of issues with his health. He's been false started a couple of times by Ottawa. The career really hasn't come together for the big defenseman from the Spokane Chiefs of the Western Hockey League. But his contract is such that this is where maybe Chicago gets tempted, maybe Los Angeles as well. If you trade for Jared Cowan and buy him out in the summer, you actually get a cap credit of around $625,000.
Wow.
Because the money you pay him is actually more than what his salary cap hit is worth. So would it surprise anyone to see the Chicago Blackhawks say to themselves, we can make the money wash, Brian Bickle for Jared Cowan. We get ourselves a depth defenseman for a run, and we get an extra $625,000 in cap relief come the summer when/if we buy him out. He may be, I know he's not a big name player, not going to play big name minutes, but for one very specific reason, he may be the Dos Equis guy of the trade deadline, the most interesting player around right now, and not for any specific hockey reason, but for a salary cap reason.
Merrick, I didn't know that you had enough spare time to also be a capologist when you're not hosting shows. This is amazing.
You know what? You know what, Murph? I'll tell you what. If you catch me during a lockout, I'm actually also an actuary. When you hear me talk about various accounting principles, and you start hearing all of us pretend that we're experts on salary caps and pensions and all these things. If I knew I'd be covering sports like this, I would have stayed in school, boys.
Jeff, there's been a lot of talk that that the price range for rentals might go down, but you see Andrew Ladd go for a first round pick there, and of course the Boston Bruins are possibly looking to move Louis Erickson and would love to get a first-round pick. Do you think that Ladd move now sets the market at a first-round pick for situations like that?
It's funny. Yes, it does, and that also dovetails to the Pollock Spalling deal where the Toronto Maple Leafs got two second-round picks and everyone said that Lou Lamoriello robbed the bank and didn't have to wear a mask. Like, how you got two second-round picks for those players? I mean, we've seen Lou do some pretty interesting things. I mean, he can make players disappear pretty quickly.
Yep.
He's got a history of that, but he can also make second round draft picks appear, and he made that happen for those two players with the Maple Leafs. But then, yeah, you see Andrew Ladd go essentially for two firsts because Marco Dano, the poor man's Marian Hossa, he ends up going in that deal as well. He's also a first round pick and a conditional third should the Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. I'm with you. Where once upon a time the first round draft pick was sacred, and everybody started firing around seconds like they were Pez. I think this year, the first is the new second rounder. And, with Andrew Ladd going for a package that included a first round pick, I mean, I can tell you, last night I was told that the ask from Winnipeg to Florida was either Mike Matheson or Lawson Crouse plus the first round pick. So teams are asking, and as you saw with the Winnipeg Jets, teams are getting. So don't be surprised if there's more first rounders flying around between now and Monday at 3 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit earlier with Dale Talon and the Panthers and them sort of backing away from Andrew Ladd because of the price tag. And from what I was told, and this makes perfect sense, Dale Talon's not ready to, sort of go all in with every asset that he has to
right.
try to win it this year with a young team that's got a long run ahead of it. And also, this is going to be their first rodeo for a lot of those guys in the playoffs, and you're really not sure exactly what you're going to get out of this team with that first experience, the Panthers in the postseason.
Yeah, you're right. But at the same time, I think Dale Talon knows that he owes this team something. You may look at the Boston Bruins and you're saying to yourself, what does Sweeney owe the team? Well, he owes the team the right to protect the future right now because it's an underperforming squad and it's a team that, is well away from its Stanley Cup form. So he's doing what's right for the organization. But when you look at the Florida Panthers, you say to yourself, Dale Talon owes the team a shot in the arm. Okay, so he's struck out on Andrew Ladd, we know these sweepstakes, but to your point, Ag, and it's the right one, you make that move and give up the first-round pick when you're close to winning the Stanley Cup. You don't do it just to get the kids some playoff experience, but you do owe that dressing room a shot in the arm. And so now you turn your attention to a player like Yuri Hudler. And from what I'm told, the asking price is still too much for the Florida Panthers. But could you see a player like Teddy Purcell, who was scratched last night in the Edmonton game against the Los Angeles Kings? Heavy shot. They watched him playing when he played with Tampa. They know the player well. Did he get on the inside enough? Probably not for the Western Conference, but he does for the Eastern Conference. You wonder if now Dale Talon says, okay, you strike out on Ladd. They want too much for Hudler. We're going to set our sights now on Teddy Purcell and see if we can bring that player in to give our dressing room that shot in the arm that, hey, guys, great job, and your general manager is here to help you, but still not scalp the future of the franchise.
Yeah, from what I've heard and from what I understand, there's a pretty good chance that you may see Teddy Purcell and Justin Schultz not going to Boston, but going to teams that could be directly in opposition to Boston in the playoffs and, you know, vying for some of those playoff spots. And that would be an interesting choice for Peter Chiarelli and an understandable one, too.
Yeah, it would. And, you know, I heard about 2 weeks ago, I heard that Tampa had some interest in Justin Schultz, which, you know, certainly raised a lot of my eyebrows. But the latest news, and I just talked to someone, an assistant general manager this morning, who said that, you know, one of the consensuses now around the league is, you know, Jonathan Drouin will be traded, but it will be a package deal with Anthony DeAngelo, another first-round pick, last year's DHL Defenseman of the Year, playing in the American Hockey League right now. He's been scratched a couple of games, but he expects to be traded in the Jonathan Drouin deal as well. A couple of potential landing spots there, and one of them, you know, could very well be the Minnesota Wild. We know that Jonas Brodin was available for trade and Ryan Johansson was available. And we know the team has been hot and cold, and lately it's been cold on Thomas Vanek. You know, don't be surprised if they see Drouin and DeAngelo end up with Minnesota. Vanek and Brodin going the other way. We know Tampa is looking for a left-hand shot defense and they can move the puck.
Jeff, I want to go back to Edmonton there, though, and talk about, you know, you look at what Peter Chiarelli said this past week and basically putting everyone on notice on that roster. Can he pull off a blockbuster at the deadline, or is he trying to set the wheels in motion, so to speak, for a deal maybe at the draft?
Yeah, great question. And I think all expectations are they'll do something by Monday, but I don't think Peter Chiarelli, and you guys know him a lot better than I do, from him being in Boston. But if they can't get something done by Monday, they still will do something. I was told that, you know, as much as everybody's been put on watch, whose name is in Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, you can also throw Taylor Hall into that mix. He will not be moved. But I can't say the same for number 93 and number 14. We already talked about Purcell and Schultz, but you throw Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and throw Jordan Eberle into that mix as well. You know, the time has come, and you've seen the frustration on the faces of Todd McLellan after the Ottawa loss. You hear Peter Chiarelli talk. You can only imagine how Bob Mickelson feels at this point right now with the organization. So I think they're ready to start moving core pieces. And I think Ryan Nugent-Hopkins will probably be one of them. They're sold on their future being McDavid and Draisaitl down the middle. And I think Jordan Eberle's time with Edmonton may be drawing to a close as well. And let's not forget, you know, there was a lot of talk and a lot of chatter about, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in exchange for Seth Jones before the Ryan Johansson deal. The talks are between Nashville and Edmonton. But when Poyle changes sights from Ryan Nugent-Hopkins to Leon Draisaitl, that's when the conversation stopped and he went back to Columbus. So I think it's a foundational piece movement time right now. It's a long-winded answer for you, Murph, but I think one of the foundational guys go, but it doesn't necessarily have to be by Monday unless the right deal is there for it.
And Peter, as we know, Joe, I mean, he's always been calculated. This isn't the type of guy who's going to, unless we don't know, maybe he's been working on something for months and he's now saying this to prelude something on Monday, but I would think that this is just him trying to pave the way for something big at the draft.
Yeah, could very well be, and you know, we've seen it before, and it's not the wrong move. I mean, when you really think about it, what's the hurry for Edmonton to make a move right now?
Exactly.
I know there's a frustration in the marketplace. You know, they're headed to the Austin Matthews sweepstakes again. You know, the team has not perform. This is a core that has not been able to get it done, but there really is no hurry just to satisfy the appetite of the fan base that, you know, is acting like a volcano and wants a virgin thrown into it. That really doesn't achieve anything right now unless it's the right deal, because whatever deal you make right now for Jordan Eberle or Ryan Nugent-Hopkins or a Teddy Purcell or Justin Schultz, it's going to be for the future. So if that deal's not there now, but you suspect it will be come draft time in Buffalo, then you wait, because there is no urgency right now for Edmonton to make a deal other than to maybe keep the torches away from the Castle Gate around Rexall as the fans start to revolt yet again.
Well, I hope all virgins make it through the weekend unscathed and not thrown into volcanoes, because that might wipe out half of the fancy stacks and analytics crew. Just kidding, Merrick. When you look at this kind of season is urgent for, you know, certain teams like Edmonton. I obviously you're bang on with that. You know, they can wait it out. You know what? Sure. What I'm interested in and what is really intriguing to me is Chicago makes that preemptive early move. Stan Bowman gets Andrew Ladd. You know, what's the response here and the responsibility in the arms race that's going to build up now? St. Louis, Anaheim, L.A., you know, the other teams out
there. Nashville.
And Nashville in the West that really have to match those moves now, or, you know, those first-round picks for those teams, I think, start to get sacrificed a little more easily than they might have before that deal.
Yep, with you as well. And when if you want to start with the St. Louis Blues, let's not forget that Doug Armstrong drafted Louis Erickson. So there's probably a fit there who goes back the other way. That could be a big question mark. We know that Anaheim has plenty of young defense, and that is a very coveted resource. At times, they've soured on Cam Fowler, the $4 million defenseman, who's one of the premier skaters in the NHL. You look at his stride, he looks like Scott Niedermeyer. Not that he's that defensive, but if you want someone that can move his feet in his own zone, Cam Fowler's a nice choice. I know they love Batman, specifically on the power play. Don't want to do anything with him there. And Bob Murray has said, don't even talk to me about Shea Theodore. But they still do have assets on that blue line to move. They're in a very unique situation, Anaheim is, and that everybody wants a defenseman. Everybody wants to shake a defenseman free from another team. And the only team that seems to have a glut of them right now are the Anaheim Ducks. They're looking for a winger. Which is why Louis Erickson's name has come up. Jonathan Drouin's name has come up as well. So I expect Bob Murray, now that the Anaheim Ducks are once again a contender for the Stanley Cup, I expect the Anaheim Ducks to be really frisky this weekend.
What's your read on the Louis Erickson situation in Boston? We've obviously talked about it quite a bit, and it's a real interesting crossroads type situation for Don Sweeney, where it's a tough one and there's no sort of easy choice for him to make. You know, the Bruins are obviously in the midst of a playoff hunt. They're right in the picture. Barring a huge collapse in the last 20 games, they should be in. But at the same time, and it's in a wide open Eastern Conference beyond Washington, you know, all that. But at the same time, 23rd in the league in defense, the Bruins, their defenseman core sorely needs an upgrade in a couple of different places, I think. And this is a roster with some holes that I think is going to get exposed quite a bit in the playoffs. So there's a very good argument to be made that if you can't sign Louis Erickson, which I don't think the Bruins are going to be able to do, that you should move him for whatever assets you can get, whether it's, you know, a first rounder and a prospect like the Market Bears are trying to package it into a defenseman. You know, what would you do if you were Don Sweeney in this situation that they're headed into right now?
Well, you know, I would do what you wrote about not too long ago, and that is, you know, make this a bigger deal, that where you package a draft pick and you package a Kuklyshev, someone who's been frustrated with the organization and has been, you know, feels as if he's been somehow wronged by the Boston Bruins. You start to make this a bigger deal and get something more significant on the way back. I don't think this is just we're stating Louis Erickson for something, you know, in a one-for-one deal. Almost you'd be Louis Erickson's situation. I'm with you. I think, listen, it's pretty obvious that they're not going to sign him. So I think you have to move on and try to protect the future of the franchise. Do they have defensemen on the horizon? Yes, they do. Brandon Carlo in Tri-City, Jakub Sporl in St. John with the D-Dogs. You have, of course, Dr. Carlson on the horizon as a centerman who's going to fill a spot somewhere down the road. So
they like Lauzon and the Q quite a bit too.
I couldn't believe when he wasn't initially on the World Junior roster. I'm like, where the hell is Jeremy Lauzon here? He is such a fantastic defenseman on a team that, you know, may end up going to the MasterCard Memorial Cup this year. But it's not as if the cupboard is bare for the Boston Bruins for the future. But you're right, they need some help right now, which is why, you know, if I'm Sweeney, I'm looking hard at the Anaheim Ducks and trying to pry loose one of those mid-range defensemen, and I'm probably setting my sights on Cam Fowler.
Jeff, before I get to my question for you too, I just want to give you guys both an update. You brought up Jared Cowan. He has been waived now, just now, by the Toronto Maple Leafs. So interesting stuff there. You're definitely onto something.
Interesting. I mean, it's a unique beast, right? I mean, hey, who wants a cap credit next year? Anyone feeling the pinch? Hey, Chicago. Hey, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Anybody want a cap credit here?
Yeah, and I think this is a kid too. You never know. Change of environment. He's young. He's still got some talent. Yeah. So you never know.
And you know, the interesting thing about that too, Murph, is I talked to someone last night who was, you know, close to the Leafs organization. I said, you know, went over this scenario, and he said, well, yeah, that's one scenario that we could see playing out with the Maple Leafs. And he said, like, if there's one coach in the NHL that can help facilitate a defenseman, isn't that guy Mike Babcock?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some speculation that, you know, Jared Cowan was playing with some type of injury last year. Was it a groin injury? I don't know. It sure seemed that way. The push-off wasn't there for Jared Cowan. If he can, you know, get the right medical attention, if he can find himself in the right environment where he is protected. I mean, I watched him Sonny play in Spokane, and it's a different guy that we saw play in Ottawa. So if there's anyone that's going to rehabilitate him, you know, I wonder if the Maple Leafs just say, you know what, here, we could trade him, get a pick, and hand someone some cap relief, or we can say, look, we're part of a long-term project, and players like this should be part of our bailiwick.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Keeping with the defenseman theme, I wrote a column this past week, Jeff, that I think it's time for the Boston Bruins to really entertain the idea and maybe fall through with it of trading captain Zdeno Chara. He's got two years left, kind of a expensive cap hit next year at 6.9, but then it goes down to 4 in the final season. Obviously can't be the number one guy that they're requiring him to be here, but I think if you put him on a contender with a couple guys in front of him, he's a great number three or even maybe a number two. So it could benefit him, rejuvenate him a bit, give him another shot at a cup that he's not going to get here in Boston. What do you think of the chances on that?
Interesting idea, too. And it's one that I think a lot of us have, you know, sort of, you know, whispered about for a while. Like, hey, you know, what's happening with the captain on the Bears there? Like, well, what's going on? Like, he's, you know, clearly on the back nine of his career. You can see the clubhouse. He's on the shady side of the mountain with the Bruins, A, entertain the idea of trading him, and B, would he even waive his no-trade clause? And C, and this is where it gets sort of philosophical, if you're a team that thinks you have a shot at a long Stanley Cup run, and you look at Zdeno Chara, do you not say to yourself, what's this guy going to look like at his age with the wear and tear on his body after 3 rounds of the playoffs? Like, if we want a long run, is he going to be there in the Stanley Cup final? Like, or is there just too many miles on that body that we can't bank on 4 rounds of the playoffs
with
Zdeno Chara if we have a cup run?
I think the only sort of saving grace with that for a GM might be, and this is what I think would be important about potentially moving him, is if you take him from a situation in Boston where he's playing close to 25 minutes a night, where he's still considered the number one guy, the captain, playing in all situations, playing against the best players all the time, like everything on his shoulders, and you moved him to a team, you know, L.A., Chicago, Florida, you know, name it, where he could potentially take a lesser role.
Be more of a situational player.
Well, a middle pairing guy playing 20 minutes a night and only, you know, playing in lesser high leverage situations some of the time. Maybe you can get that out of him. But I'm with you that that would be a roll of the dice if you're a GM betting on, you know, one of the oldest players in the league.
Yeah, you'd have to really, you know, to your point, manage the minutes really well, you know, doesn't play back-to-back, you know, a lot of rehab days, a lot of practices off. It would take a really sophisticated program for Zdeno Chara to make sure, to make sure that he's able to, you know, to play to the rigors of a lengthy playoff run. And the other question I would ask you, if you're the Boston Bruins, and you have, you know, you mentioned Lozon, and you mentioned Borrell, and you mentioned Brandon Carlo. Like, don't you want someone like Chara in the room when these guys turn pro?
It's a good point.
Yeah, I'm with you.
We talk so much about, you know, players needing mentorship when they turn pro. Is there a better example of how to be a pro than Zdeno Chara?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to learn 10 languages during the lockout. I'm going to get my real estate license. I'm going to do the Tour de France. I'm going to keep myself in elite level shape. I have, you know, probably the best grip strength of anybody in the entire NHL. Like, what better example for these blue liners than
Zdeno
Chara, even if he is, you know, with sort of diminished powers?
I think he's going to become a chess master this summer, Merrick. I think that's the new one for
him. And you know what? Nobody would be surprised. It wouldn't shock anybody.
All right, just one more quick one. Eric Staal is a name that's obviously not official that he's going to be out there or traded, but the speculation is that Carolina is going to pull the trigger there. And anywhere you in particular you think he's going to go?
The Rangers seem to be the one team that's most interested. They could do it if you put, Rick Nash on LTI, who, by the way, guys, have you seen anyone with a bone bruise stay out?
I was just going to get to that. Talk about circumventing the cap, eh?
I'm sorry. I don't know that bone bruise. It's got to be something else, right? Stress fracture. What? I don't know. But I'm highly skeptical that this is a bone bruise. But if you put him on LTIR, then maybe you free up enough wiggle room.
And then he returns for the
like
players.
Eric Staal. But the problem with me, who's the Eric Staal that you're getting?
Right.
At this point, we talk about wear and tear on the body. You're not getting the 2008 Eric Staal. That guy's probably gone. If you're Ron Francis and you say to yourself, we're only going to get, pennies on the dollar in a trade for Eric Staal, unless the Rangers just knock your socks off and start saying Kreider, at which point you jump all over.
Oh, wow.
Or Brady Shea or something like that, which I just can't see happening for someone like Eric Staal or a first-round draft pick. Is he not just, then more valuable to Ron Francis just to keep him there? Just to keep, listen, Jordan Staal's having a wonderful year. The loss against the Maple Leafs, because they would have pulled so close to a playoff spot had they beat the Maple Leafs on Thursday night. The loss was, I don't want to say devastating, but a pretty big setback for them. But this is a team that's, scratching and clawing their way to a playoff spot. Cam Ward is playing out of his mind. That defense has been outstanding, specifically blue line to blue line. If you look at the underlying numbers of what Bill Peters has been with that blue line, in the neutral zone, it's nothing short of astounding. Sure, they take the first 10 minutes to warm up their core seat to keep the analytics guys happy, but still, it's a really nice thing that Bill Peters has going on right there. I wonder if you're on Francis and say, if we're not going to get much for Eric Staal, aren't we better served than just to keep the face of the franchise here for when we do have some playoff success that is still Eric Staal's team? Unless the Rangers just totally throw the farm at you, if I'm Ron Francis, I keep it.
Well, the other thing, too, though, to keep in mind, and I agree with everything you're saying, though, is what does Eric Staal want, too? I mean, if he comes to them and says, look, if you can get something good for me and it makes sense for you, I'd really like to go and have one more shot at the cup, then maybe they do.
Yeah.
I know it's a business, but then maybe they feel, hey, this guy's been great to our organization. We owe him this, but
we'll
see.
He hasn't seemed too heartbroken when he's been presented with the option of maybe playing somewhere else at the end of the season.
No, exactly.
Publicly, which tells you quite a bit. Jeff Merrick.
Oh, no, he's eyes open wide about all of this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't discount the idea that guys, if he does get asked to waive his no trade, that, he'll agree to waive and he'll go somewhere. But then, don't be surprised if he ends up coming back to the Carolina organization at a discount, mind you.
Exactly.
come July 1st. Because when we talk about this being a business, and I'm with you, it's a business, you got to make the cold, hard, decisions, you need to get assets back. But part of the business is selling tickets and keeping the face of the franchise around, to keep, fans happy and have someone they can relate to that goes back to 2006. And I know you shouldn't run a franchise like that, and also keeping sponsors happy. But, that's part of the marketing of your team as well. So in some ways, we saw this with Ginland in Calgary, and maybe they hung on too long, and they probably did, but that was partially to sell tickets and to keep sponsorships active because he was such a big part of, things like, the Scotiabank activation for the Calgary Flames. Mm-hmm. But I still think from a business point of view, business isn't just get assets. I think business is also keeping sponsors happy and keeping season ticket holders happy.
There are people and emotions and sentimentality underneath the numbers always with professional sports, and sometimes people definitely forget about that. Jeff Merrick, you are a gentleman and a scholar. We appreciate the time. Should be a fun weekend.
And you gentlemen as well are gentlemen, scholars, and judges of good liquor. And I encourage you to have a fun time this weekend.
All right, buddy. Give our
trades
best
and libations.
Give our best to Wyshynski, will you please?
I will, boys. Always a pleasure being out with you.
All right. See you, Jeff. All right, thanks to Jeff Merrick. Always fun talking to him.
Great guy.
Some great insight on the trade deadline. Let's go three periods with Tyler Randall, the young enforcer for the Boston Bruins.
What is your favorite sports movie?
I'm going to have to go with the classic slap shot.
I think that's a popular choice. What about it is it makes you go with that rather than maybe like something a little newer?
It just brings me back to growing up in minor hockey and all our bus trips to the hotels and the tournaments on the weekends. Probably watched that movie about 300 times throughout my minor hockey career. But, it's just one that brings back those memories of growing up and it's obviously a great movie.
Any characters that you relate especially towards more than the others?
More towards the Hanses. I'm not going to say I relate with them. that game has changed a little bit.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's still... Yeah. That's really where the energy picks up in the movie, just it should.
The Hanses are great. Played with Christian Hansen in Providence a couple years ago, so got to meet his dad. It was pretty cool.
What any particular song that you listen to or have listened to more than any others that gets you, you know, excited, ready to go, like kind of a go-to if you're really sort of looking to pump up for a game?
Yeah, I like A Warrior Call. We had it in our warm-up at the beginning of the year. I trained with Aaron Downey, who used to play here. And he always throws that on the summer to get us all pumped up. So it's definitely A Warrior Call. Full beat A Warrior Call.
What is it about that? Is there anything? It brings back memories of like when you've warmed up to it before and stuff, or what is it about that song?
Yeah, whenever we're doing intense lifting in the gym, Downey will always throw it on and get the guys fired up, and it just gets me going.
DVR wise or binge watching wise, anything TV that you're super into or you make sure you record every week when it's on and you're kind of religious about watching?
I have trouble finishing shows. Like, I'll start and I'll get a couple seasons in and then it'll slowly die off. But, I'm not really a binge TV guy. But
is there anything that you, like, look forward to watching every week, too, if it's not binge watching? I mean, I'm assuming you might have a DVR somewhere, whether it's at home or here. Anything you've got on, like, the series recording, like, you've committed to at least recording it and trying to watch it?
Yeah, we watched...
Breaking Bad?
No, it was the biker one.
Oh, Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy. We watched that. I watched that quite a bit last year with Tommy Cross and Malcolm Subban. So we watched that for a while, and then obviously died off like all the other ones.
Yeah, it's got the head coach from Goon in it too, right? Yeah, so that's not bad.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's a great show. A lot of suspense. It's crazy, but it was a pretty good show.
All right, Murph, let's get a little interactive up in this piece in the podcast, the Great American Hockey Show podcast. We'll answer a few Twitter questions now. We like to do this from time to time, get in touch with the common man out there on social media. So let's take this one from the Bitter Man TBM. Is Sweeney savvy enough to hold on to Louis Erickson to the last minute and come out with something good, or will Don Sweeney choke under fire?
I think he's going to be savvy enough. I mean, I think Don Sweeney has shown that he's not afraid to make bold moves. Whether you agreed with those moves at the draft or not, he did it. And I think that he's a smart hockey man. The one thing I worry about with him being a rookie GM, so to speak, is he part of that core network of other GMs? Is he in that sort of clique that we know exists, the fraternity? Yep. And will they be willing to not necessarily help him, but deal with him and give him the best possible deal?
Yeah.
Are they going to try and fleece him, so to speak?
Or are they going to – they know that he's under pressure to make deals, and are they going to try to make him feel that pressure by freezing him out and getting him to panic at the end and, you know, pull a third-round pick for Zach Rinaldo type move? Because he's had a couple of those already in the tenure where you kind of wonder what he was doing there. As long as this is the Don Sweeney that got two first-round picks, Colin Miller and a college prospect for Milan Lucic, and not the Don Sweeney that, you know, panicked a little bit with Dougie Hamilton and got pennies on the dollar for him, then I think the Bruins will be okay. And this is an interesting situation in general, Murph, because with Louis Erickson, they're in a tough spot right now. You know, they're in one of the top three spots in the Atlantic Division. It's a wide open East beyond the Washington Capitals. It's a very mediocre Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. You know, they've seemingly righted the ship a little bit with a couple of wins against good teams, Dallas, Pittsburgh. And there's going to be some pressure
to keep a guy like Louis Erickson through the rest of the run because you're a playoff team and not be quote-unquote a seller. But at the same time, this is a player that I don't feel like there's going to be a contract agreement here. I still think he's going to walk at the end of the year because they're not going to come to the 5 or 6 years that Louis Erickson and his camp want them to. With this Andrew Ladd trade and a first-round pick and a prospect going for him, that sets the market that that's the bare minimum you're going to get for Louis Erickson. I still feel like the right move is to trade him at the deadline to the highest bidder, get those future assets. And even if, you know, people will say, oh, you don't need any first-round picks. You already got two. You've already got prospects. You know what? You stockpile first-round picks, and then you make a huge deal for a defenseman in the summertime with all those picks and with all those assets. Anybody that just, like, says, oh, no big deal. Why do you need another first-round pick is the biggest moron alive.
You need as many as you can.
Exactly.
First-round picks are like cash at the draft. They're a commodity.
But there is also the pressure, I'm sure Sweeney and Cam Neely are feeling that in the room, the morale and what it's going to be like in there. David Krejci already said it would be sad if Louis Erickson were traded away and if there would be veteran backlash down the stretch here in the final 20 games if they traded away a player like that. That's a legit concern.
Yeah, for sure. And I get that, but you know what? Too bad. I mean, I'm sorry, guys. I know you're going to be sad and you know, you're going to feel like maybe management doesn't believe in you. But I look at it as if you're the core of that team who's still got some years left. This is them really believing you to be a contender for years to come. That's what they want to build here. They don't want to just have, let's go all in for one round in the playoffs. This is them being realistic, and you got to be mature enough to understand that this is a business and that's the way you have to do it.
Yeah, and there is no way they're going to reach any kind of long-term deal with him at the numbers that he wants. Why would he bypass that to take a hometown discount with the Bruins? I don't think that part of it's going to happen. I think the most realistic scenario I see playing out at this point, I do think there's going to be some legit concern from the Bruins now, and there may be last-minute cold feet about trading him. I don't think they're going to come to a contract agreement, but I do think there's some real fear that if they trade him, things are going to fall apart down the stretch.
And then they just hold on to him.
They're going to be, you know, they're going to look bad in the end or like they pulled the team apart, and they're worried about the fan base reaction from doing that. But look, and I wrote about this in a piece on CSNNE.com, I did a Twitter poll. Just basically not even what you were going to get back, just if Louis Erickson and the Bruins will not come to a contract agreement, you know, should they trade him away for assets or keep him for the playoff run? 2,000 people voted. It was 80-20 to trade him away.
Yeah.
The fans do not want to
keep
Louis Erickson.
I'm glad the fans are finally coming around. Because, I mean, sometimes you listen to sports radio around here and people are just like, oh, how can they do this? They're blowing up the team. And come on, you're not blowing anything up here. You're just playing smart. And, you know, the one thing the Bruins might have going for them, Joe, when it comes to possibly signing him, though, that I think about is the strong possibility that the salary cap's going down. So these guys might not get what they think they're going to get on the open market. They're probably going to get more than what the Bruins are offering him, but he might not get what he's demanding on the open market.
We'll see. I still don't buy into that it's going to go down. I might stay level.
Oh, it's going to.
I don't
you
know.
Watch.
We'll see. I know you don't believe in the Canadian dollar. You're a doubter. As far as the Bruins go, too, in their playoff hopes in the wide open East, 23rd in the league in goals allowed, been poorest defensively all year. Those are the teams that are casualties early in the playoffs and do not last very long in the postseason. That's why Dallas is going to flame out again in the West. You heard it here first. All right, Rob Addy, Rubber Source is the name on Twitter. Any moves being done other than Louis by the Bruins?
I think there's definitely going to be moves. I could see the Bruins making 2 to 3 moves right now. I think that they're going to try and trade some picks. They're going to try and trade Louis. They could turn around and take the picks that they get for Louis and then turn around and trade him right away. I think the Bruins are open to a multitude of moves right now, and I still think their main focus is to get a D-man.
Yeah, and I think Chris Russell in Calgary is a very viable candidate, the type of player they could trade a draft pick for. And
if they're willing to take a rental.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. Just a 4 to 5 for now. But if they're going to keep Louis Erickson, they're basically saying we're making a run here.
Exactly.
So they would do something like that. Mark Strait, another one down in Philadelphia that will probably become available. Could be interesting as far as that goes. Let's see. Who do you think would be the best D-man for the Bees? Shattenkirk, Vatanen, or Trouba, or another?
And who's this from?
Tyler Gerhold, which is Tyler X Gerhold at Tyler X Gerhold.
All right. And what's the question? Who do I think what?
Jesus. Are you paying attention?
I was worried about
–
what
the hell?
I wanted you to credit the guy. That's all.
Who do you think should be the best D-man for the Bruins? Shattenkirk, Vatanen, or Trouba, or another?
The best D-man, I think, for the Bruins would be Shattenkirk, but I think – that they won't get him. I think the best guy that they have a chance at getting is Vatanen.
I think, Vatanen in the summertime, though. They're not going to get him now. I do think that Trouba, obviously, but I think now, you know, with Ladd being traded away, they might be able to keep him. Shattenkirk would be interesting, and I still think that the best chance that you have to get somebody that's going to really significantly help you now in a deal at the deadline is St. Louis and Shattenkirk, because the Blues are up against the cap, because they need to make some kind of a move, because they need scoring.
Yeah, like they can't be one and out again.
Absolutely. All right, from Michael Kelly, Michael J. Kelly, 82, who used to be a producer over at Neckin. Huge Capitals fan, tweets me all the time, just a Joe Haggerty chronic on social media. Is there a team in the East you fear aside from the Capitals, and even their playoff history should give you second thoughts?
The New York Rangers.
Yep.
Yep, I just think they're due, and this is it for them. I think that their window is closing very soon, and I think they realize that. I could see them going out and getting Eric Staal at the deadline, and I think they're going to make a push again for the Cup, and you never know how hot Lundqvist can get in the playoffs.
Like Staal's going to the Rangers.
I really do.
Really?
Yep.
Well, yeah, I guess now, because he's not going to be going...
Leave one brother for the other.
To Toronto, and that they're going to be going full bore for Stamkos in the offseason. So I know the rumors way back were about Staal in Toronto. Yeah. That's an interesting one. And play with his brother. I could see that. The Rangers are definitely one. And this is I think, asked in the vein of who would you be afraid of if you were the Bruins in the East? I think, obviously, the Capitals. Obviously, the Rangers. Obviously, the Lightning, who are the sleeping giant, and who are going to absolutely, and they're already now winning games down the stretch, and are going to be a monster in the playoffs. The Florida Panthers, I know they're young and inexperienced, but you can't tell me that the Bruins have a shot against a team like that, that is young, fast, talented, all over the place, doesn't have a lot of weaknesses. And then you got Sean Thornton playing the mind games over on the other bench against the Bruins if they played in the first round.
Get the water bottles ready.
And even like the New York Islanders, the Detroit Red Wings, I would put those teams in a category where I think they've clearly got a leg up on the Bruins in a post-game series. So I put it this way. I think there's at least five or six teams that you really don't have any kind of a legitimate shot against if you're the Boston Bruins in the first round. Like I said before, when you're bad defensively, when you're poor defensively all season, when you have the issues that they do in that kind of area, you do not last very long in the playoffs.
No.
You get exposed quickly.
Everything tightens up.
Yeah, the weaknesses get thrown out there real fast. They get exploited, and then you're done and working on the offseason.
I don't think this team is mentally strong enough for the playoffs either.
No.
I think that's a big thing right
there. No, and it, the whole thing, I think, could fall apart rather quickly. And maybe it will down the stretch during the regular season. Man, we are like the harbingers of doom here for the blind and gold. All right, Murph, this was a jam-packed, info nugget-filled episode of the Great American Hockey Show, a podcast. As always, good to be with you.
Always a pleasure, Joe. And, you know, this is, like, I think one of the favorite podcasts to do around the trade deadline. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. You got to love the buzz building up around it. I still think... I'm going to throw this idea quickly out there that they should make the trade deadline a little earlier so that teams aren't so confused as to where they are and their chances at the playoffs. And I also think they should do it at a central location like they do for the draft. And I think that would hype it up even more.
Like do a Toronto, like every GM has to show up there for the trade deadline?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, God, they would
absolutely. We'll do a podcast from there, Joe.
They would absolutely hate that. Yeah, I'm sure.
We'll do it in Montreal.
I'm sure Daddy Comcast will put the the money down for us to go to Toronto.
Send us to Hurley's in Montreal.
No problem at all. We'll take that under advisement and negotiations. All right, that's it for this week's edition of the Great American Hockey Show. As always, keep it great, keep it American, and always keep it about hockey. If you want to hear more Comcast Sportsnet podcasts or learn how to subscribe to our iTunes feed, head over to csnne.com/podcast.